No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Truth Brigade Radio, live Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m., only on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The truth has just gotten hotter.
I wanna do you no harm. I just wanna know about your different lives. I heard some of people fall. I heard some you got your families living in cages, tall and cold. Some just stay there and dust away past the age of old.
Is this hey, welcome me? Back to the Truth or Gold.
Please wait a time.
Yeah, Aaron. Today we're going to be talking to BK from Toronto Truth Seekers. Are you with us, BK?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks.
Hey, BK.
I'm sorry?
You've been... yeah, that's Karen. I'm Karen, and that was Karen.
That was Karen. How are you, Karen?
So I know that Toronto Truth Seekers, it's like we are change, you know, you're not 9/11 truth group, and you also go into other topics such as truth about vaccines, and now you're also, I think, dealing with the what happened recently at the G20. Can you tell me a bit about Toronto Truth Seekers?
Sure. I've been involved in a few different Toronto 9/11 truth groups for a few years here, on and off for about 5 years. And so there were a couple of Toronto 9/11 truth groups and the We Are Change Toronto. And my colleague Mark Savory and I, Mark being the owner of the TTS meetup site where most of us communicated and got together, some time, you know, we've been friends for over a year. I guess it'd be 2 years this summer. And, in the winter of 2009, I was having some meetings at my house for about 8 weeks trying to plan for a good summer of truthing. And so that was in January and February, and basically, you know, 4:30 to 8:30 p.m., you know, stop 80% of the world's population being murdered, 8:30 p.m. to midnight, cookies and punch, let's just party. And so I had a number of truthers come through my place, and through those meetings and Mark and I's discussions and discussions with others, we decided to sort of reform the group and change it from Toronto 9/11 Truth to Toronto Truth Seekers, just to make the issue more open and to encompass more areas which we thought were relevant and critical to Canadians, because we were getting some people saying, oh yeah, I know 9/11 is an inside job, but they weren't connecting it to present threats to, you know, themselves, their families, and so on. So we started on that, and then through some more discussions with myself and Mark and others at Toronto Truth Seekers, we saw how big the swine flu or H1N1 pandemic scare was. We were concerned about the possibility of mandatory vaccinations, so certainly our self-interest, but we also didn't want anybody else in our city to be forced to take a vaccine. And I thought it was going to be bird flu back in the winter meetings. I thought that was going to be a bird flu pandemic. It turned out to be swine flu. But you know, we were just wargaming a bunch of scenarios. So by the time the vaccine hysteria hit, we were already on the streets since about July of last year. And every Saturday for several hours handing out vaccine exemption forms, places like, you know, flyers and DVDs with information on them, and places like VRAN.org to get exemption forms that many parents don't know they can get, that are perfectly legal. You can take them to a notary, get them, you know, signed to prove that they're a legal document. You didn't just Photoshop it. And then you can take that to your school and you can put it in your child's school file. And your child does not have to be vaccinated. And we met so many parents who didn't want to vaccinate their kid but thought they had to. And that's just a, you know, it's not worth it when you think vaccines are that bad to not continue looking for a way to prevent your child from having to take one. And so a lot of parents we talked to were happy about that. And just to cap it off, it went very well. People appreciated us, and we kind of, you know, captured a spot and held it in the middle of the city. And we're still there today and still there every Saturday for, you know, from about noon until about 5, 6 p.m., handing out information of a wide variety.
Yeah, that's really great. I was really impressed when I saw what you guys were doing. You have a YouTube channel called Support Local Scene. Is that it?
Or is it Support Local? That is, That actually belongs to Danny Liberty, Daniel Libby, talented young journalist and filmmaker, also a CKLN radio programmer. But he did extensive work documenting not only what we were doing, but how the public was reacting to us. And so we have sort of that proof to sort of share with other Canadians that you can talk about these things publicly in Canada and not catch a lot of heat for it. In fact, catch a lot of love for it.
So just for our listeners, is it support local scene or is it support your local scene? Sorry, I forgot now.
I think it's youtube.com/support local scene. But if you type Toronto Truth Seekers into YouTube.
Toronto Truth Seekers, right? I watched those videos and I thought that was really great that you guys were really organized, because that tends to be a problem a lot of time with the truth movement. A lot of people have a lot of information, but there's a lack of leadership and organization, and so we reach a limited amount of people. So you set up these booths in Toronto and you're handing out all this information. Did you get any trouble? Did you have to have a permit, number one? Did you have any trouble with law enforcement that asked what you were doing? You know, they like to harass people sometimes when doing things like that. Did you guys have any trouble at all with that?
Well, I mean, I can speak for you know, all the truth movements in Toronto, just because I've been affiliated with them at times and would have heard otherwise if this was true. But our experience with law enforcement in this city has been great, in the sense that, you know, they don't stop us, they don't bother us too much. And this has been over the course of a few years. Now, in the last, you know, year or so, you know, they've been asked to step up a little bit. So, for example, we had a wonderful truth table and truth umbrella emblazoned with, you know, Toronto 9/11 truth and health, wealth, and relationships and important info and a great, you know, you can see this in the videos. And we even got a permit for it because we were, after being there without a permit, corporate security working for the city was asked to ask us to get a permit. So we got a couple of permits. And then eventually...
BK, I just want to ask you. So you had to get a permit to have a table to flyer?
Well, then we couldn't have a table. Then they eventually said you can't have a table or an umbrella. It's a safety hazard.
Kind of
it's like...
Busking. So to me that sounds like a really lame excuse to give you guys a hard time, because you are not entertainers, you're not buskers, you're not asking for money,
you're not selling, like, you're not.
I was forced to rap right after we got it. I was just, they're like, where's your permit? And it's like, ah, here it is. It's like, says you're busking. I was like, all right. So we went and we bought a stereo and played some beats, and me and Danny Liberty and a couple other guys were just freestyling just to make sure there was some entertainment with a side of truth. And put it this way, ladies, it's not a consistent attack. It's not an attack from the individuals themselves. It's not even something they want to do, because most of the time they left us alone and try to leave us alone and even take some of our material. But once in a while, there's an order that ripples through from higher up where, for example, the Ontario licensing authorities were taking charge one day and shut us down. And even the guy was nice to me. The guy's name is George Red. Talked to me for like 20 minutes, and we had a great conversation about what this means, where he tried to, you know, leak a bit to me about, you know, how, you know, they're being pressured, and I tried not to compromise him too much or attack him too much and just be sensitive to where he's coming from. And so in that position, you actually get to talk to people and you get to hear them express their frustrations over having to do something they don't want to do to people who aren't bothering anybody. So, you know, in a nutshell, institutionally, there is a lot more pressure to crack down on free speech and even pull down my posters, and there's graffiti cleanup teams, and they're anticipating that we're going to want to take to the streets and or put up information, so they're stepping up a little bit to combat that. But the good news is that if you develop a good relationship with your city cleanup crew, with your police, with your city's corporate security, they will, if they can, look the other way, and I've noticed this happen with me.
It's quite scary that they would try to give you a hard time like that, like tell you need a busker's permit when you're not busking, and then say that, you know, you're not busking, so you shouldn't be there, and then take your table away. In Montreal, if you have a you can set up a table with flyers, but if you're marching through the street, then it's considered protesting, and you need a permit. But, you know, we see a general movement cracking down on free speech, everything from internet sites, bloggers, sites getting hacked, sites of people speaking against the mainstream medical and pharmaceutical establishment, like Dr. Andrew Molden, getting hacked, Obama deception getting taken down. calls for tighter internet security, that bloggers should need a license, all kinds of things like that. So, you know, clearly, and then what happened at the G20, obviously. So there's a lot of opposition to free speech right now. So I think, you know, it's really great that you guys are doing this, and I hope that they don't try to throw too many, obstacles in your way or try to shut you down. Because if that kind of thing happens right here in Canada, I mean, you know, this whole free speech thing goes, there's so many things going on this last year, like Ann Coulter, who, as obnoxious as she is, should have a right to free speech, and she was told that we have limits to free speech in Canada, so they actually admitted that, and then all these other things that I mentioned.
So, sure, well, Luke Radowski was kept out of Canada, and Luke Radowski is a young man without peer on planet Earth. I mean, he's one of the most courageous, hardworking young men in the world, and the country of Canada denied him entry because he was supposedly harassing Mayor Bloomberg, even though he was never charged and never convicted. So he wasn't a felon. They just said, you know, we don't like what you do when it comes to free speech and questioning authority. And that, you know, there was no legal standard there. So the Canadian immigration stopped Luke Radowski from coming into Canada without even a legal basis for doing so.
That we constantly allow in any possible war criminals in. That's okay, though. It just really, I feel like that really reflects, though, who these people are loyal to.
Well, and this gets us to, the next stage of this, which is sort of hand-to-hand combat in terms of handing people stuff, you know, handing people flyers, DVDs, not even talking to them about it, because we're scared to talk these days, period. And in many parts of, you know, major urban centers, thanks to all the text messaging and chatting and socialization and so on. And I've noticed myself that if I, you know, I'm at a shawarma place, I see one, my shawarma guy who I've known for a while there, he's there, his wife, his baby daughter, just 2 months old or whatever. And so I'm flipping out. I got a couple of vaccine exemption forms, little flyers on me. And just before I leave the shawarma place, I just stick them in his pocket. And I say, hey, man, check into this later. And he's holding his little baby girl. And I leave, and I say goodbye to his wife, and I leave. And I don't talk to them about it. And then I see them a week or two later, and a little nervous to see me, but then I'm cool, get my shawarma, chill out, and I leave. See them a little bit later, you know, they're cool. Because in this country, we get more respect for our discipline than our passion. And we get more respect for being polite than we do for being honest. And so you have to find ways of working around that. I mean, I've seen guys, you know, like the guy from the UK, like Charlie Veach and Manny Badillo from We Are Change. So Charlie Veach and the Love Police, Manny Badillo from We Are Change, be on megaphones here at Dundas Square and do what they do in London and New York, and it doesn't work. And when we try it, it doesn't work in the sense of screaming at people, wake up, you know, or making them feel guilty about what they're doing in terms of going shopping. I'm not trying to pick on Charlie, I'm not trying to pick on Manny Badillo. They're two of the most well-spoken individuals. I just lived in this city for my entire life. And I study how the city reacts to how we communicate with them, and then I try and find ways of communicating with them and then reporting on the results on my radio show. And when guys come through with megaphones and they make people feel guilty or they make people feel stupid, then it doesn't work. And when you come on a megaphone, and many of us at Toronto Truth Seekers have done this, we're on there for short bursts. We're on there to say, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. You know, this is a short message on behalf of Toronto Truth Seekers. We are taking some of our own time, our own money, and our own goodwill and our own energy to share a little bit of information we've learned with you, truth that we think that might help you. And so, you know, if you have a moment, please do grab a flyer or a DVD from one of your fellow Canadians. If it's stupid, then just laugh at it. And if it's smart, then just enjoy it. But nobody should be threatened by anything that any other Canadian has to say to them, especially at this time in history. Thank you very much. Done. And then the crowd goes, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah, you have to be culturally sensitive because, you know, every country has a different culture, a different way of approaching people, and Canadians are known to be particularly polite, right? And
yeah, I personally had an encounter when I was at a friend's house the other day, and I pointed that out, and it's true, people don't respond well to that. Like, we were talking about, they were talking about how Canadians are so known for saying sorry all the time, and I just made a little comment. I didn't think people were going to take it so seriously, but I said, yeah, like, Canadians are considered, like, some of the most complacent people on the planet. And it just totally, people don't want to hear, people gotta be gentle.
Yeah, well, I agree.
In England, what works in England may not work here just because we have a different mentality. People may feel, you know, affronted or even assaulted, and people, or maybe they don't have the sense of humor. I mean, the Brits have a particularly dry and wry sense of humor.
Well, look, if you talk to other truthers, then do it by yourself. You know, if you're a truther and you want to talk to other truthers, or you want to, you know, go all Ashton Kutcher and punked on people and then, you know, high five other truthers, you know, do that somewhere else. But if you're taking your message to the general public who you know don't know a lot of what you're talking about, who you know are being victimized by the New World Order and by mind control, and who you know are being made more insecure and unstable as a result of our social engineering, then you need to have a little more compassion. Otherwise, you're just doing it for yourself. And I know that at Toronto Truth Seekers is one of the sort of philosophical leaders in terms of managing the group, helping us be organized, helping us look professional, making sure our signs were taped up and our flyers were in order and weren't blowing all over the place. And a lot of us helped out, and a lot of us felt better. When we got a good day's work in done and we were organized and efficient, took breaks to go chill out, but we were just moving a ton of product and feeling better about the fact that Canadians were reacting well to this information because we were professional and nice, we felt great. And whenever we slacked off and didn't and just kind of, you know, talked amongst ourselves and kind of took a half-assed approach, we didn't. It's the same as anything else any other group of human beings decides to do. So, in terms of us being polite, in terms of us being whatever, it works in our favor. You know, no one's going to be coming up and throwing punches at us. You know, we have had a couple of altercations where people have big fights with us, but there's a few of us there and a few of us guys step up and say, you know, we just, you know, just understand that we don't want any problems, but there's enough of us here to cause one. And so, you know, we've managed to kind of, you know, be cool in that space and not argue with people if they don't want to take something. And not argue with people if they don't want to talk about it. Because if it's a Saturday afternoon and I'm walking through Dundas Square in the heart of downtown Toronto, me and my girlfriend or whatever, and I have in my mind a little shopping, a little dinner, and a little nightclubbing, I may not want to talk about a giant eugenics program that's designed to kill all of us. I just may, it may not be my thing at that moment.
Right. But, yeah, but you're right on about that. Sometimes people just
right.
don't want
but to. Right. But if I take a flyer or a DVD and I put it in my pocket or my bag, and then I go and I have a good time with my friends and I don't think about it, and then Sunday morning I wake up around 10, 11 o'clock, you know, I make a cup of coffee, I smoke a cigarette, I go to the internet, and I figure out what the hell these people are talking about. On my own time, in my own way, at my own speed. And here, where, you know, even this sentence, this rambling run-on, you know, 2.5-minute sentence is an eternity in modern speak, it's best to just pass on the information and let people digest it in a way where they can be comfortable with it, as opposed to feeling you need to prove something by kicking the crap out of somebody, by arguing about stuff that you know more about.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you with that. I mean, you know, if it gets to the point where it's an argument, you're really, I think most of the time, 99% of the time, you're wasting your time, and you're better off to look for the people who are receptive to it. On the whole, how did you find people were in terms of being receptive? Did a lot of people come up to you and say that you guys are nuts, or, oh, I've heard about this, the anti-vaccine people? Did you get heckled much?
Not much. Put it this way, the average Canadian doesn't heckle. they don't heckle a group of people.
We are known to be polite. Sorry, but we're going into a break. But everybody stay tuned. We'll be back with DK from Toronto Truth Seekers in a moment. Karen, we're talking to DK from Toronto Truth Seekers, who mounted a huge swine flu vaccine info campaign last fall that probably prevented maybe a few hundred people from getting that shot. I'd just like to let you know that our lines are open, And the call-in number is 402-237-2525. That's 402-237-2525. And our chat room is open, too. That's truthergirls.chatango.com. So, BK, I had a couple other questions for you. One is regarding Toronto Truth Seekers' current project. But before we get into that, I'd just like to know, how did the media treat you when you were doing this vaccine info campaign last fall? I know that they interviewed you. Did they spin what you guys were doing? Did they try to make you look bad, or were they fair to you?
Well, you know, I'll tell you this much. A lovely producer at CBC The National contacted Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca about Toronto Truth Seekers, and he set up a street action for us to do on Wednesday, September 30th. We usually do them on Saturdays, so the CBC basically asked us to get together at noon and fake a street action on a Wednesday. But a few of us took time off work, and there was about 15, 20 of us who showed up. So, you know, I think that the CBC was trying to be nice to us, or somebody there was trying to be nice to us within the confines of working at the CBC. And, you know, when they set it up like that, and when they take a risk on showing us, you know, being active like that, and when they send a camera crew for a couple of hours with a reporter and a camera person to, you know, do that, and then even when they attack me in the interview, because they have to, just representing the establishment point of view, and then they spend a few hours editing after that, and then they air our episode on 12 regional CBC stations, but not on the 4 hours of the national, even though half of it's changed per one-hour episode every night, and content is switched out. We didn't make any of the four episodes of the national that night. You kind of get to see the power struggle inside the CBC, and you don't necessarily say the CBC does this and the CBC does that like the Borg. You say that you know, when reporters in there or producers in there spend a fair amount of time and energy and effort and money, I suppose, covering you, even if they do, unless it's a brutal hit piece, if they're just sort of lukewarm towards you or take some sort of mainstream jabs at where you're coming from, that's them being nice to you. And so as far as I'm concerned, the CBC was nice to us by doing a fairly neutral piece. My five-minute interview was cut to what I expected, about a third of a second, you know.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
We think Canadians should get informed. That was the only thing that made it in. So.
Well, yeah, I remember seeing, I think it was raw footage of you being interviewed and them trying to corner you with certain questions. You handle it really, really well, from what I remember. But then in the end, that's what they do. They'll either just put in, they'll put in just one word, and if they don't like you, they'll put in the one thing you said that sounded dumb, and they'll leave everything else out, you know. I've seen that happen before. It's very tricky talking to the media. The other question I had for you was regarding what is Toronto Truth Seekers doing these days? Are you taking some action regarding the G20 and raising awareness?
Well, to be honest, you know, a few of us were agitating about the G20 before the G20 was coming here. I've been on it since, you know, December, and I started flyering in April. But we, you know, as people will tell you, we kind of dropped the ball on the G20 response at Toronto Truth Seekers. And there was some internal turmoil, you know, over the course of a few months where, you know, I myself, after agitating like a lunatic, saying, guys, we can do this. You know, we did this last year. Like, we can get out there. We can put out information. We can have a warm response from the public. We can design flyers. There's plenty of templates out there. And after what the G20 did to Pittsburgh, you know, we really should defend, you know, our city. The response internally, even though we grew from 200 members last summer to 400 members right now, wasn't what I thought it would be. And I personally think we got hit with COINTELPRO. I think I got hit with COINTELPRO. I think they tried to isolate me and demonize me because a few people started looking at me differently. So it's sort of water under the bridge now, but it was very public for a time. But, you know, you can ask anybody what Toronto Truth Seekers did.
We have a caller on the line, sure, that I think would like to talk to you. I just want, sure, to let them know that we see them, area code 732. Would
sure
that be all right?
In a nutshell, you can ask anybody what we did for the G20, and it wasn't enough. And a few of us did things. Brad did some great stuff. Mark gave out 400 copies of Police State 4 at a recent G20, you know, police brutality rally, so to a bunch of mainstream activists. So there were individuals that did a number of good things, but as a group, we just didn't quite get it together. But, hey, there's more crises on the way, so hopefully we will.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you did get hit with COINTELPRO, because that thing goes on a lot. We had Dr. David Ray Griffin on a while ago, and he talked about cognitive infiltration of the truth movement. So, I mean, it's a tough battle, you know.
It's not hard to destabilize people who are marginalized anyway, and that's the thing, is that because we're marginalized, we want to be mainstream, at least many of us, to try and fit in. And so taking this stuff seriously takes us further away from the mainstream thinking that we sort of crave acceptance for. And so we're trapped in a bit of a dilemma, and that's really what I'm working on now, because we have enough info, and we listen to people every day who say, get the word out and then show us how. So there's some sort of block on us being more consistent, more calm and consistent about the way we approach this that I'm working on right now, because all the techniques are there, all the tools are there. It's already been proven to work because millions of people have woken up, so it's just a question of when will we go and keep going on a regular basis. And fortunately at Toronto Truth Seekers, every Saturday since last July, we have been doing that. So
what are you guys doing next? What issues are you looking at now that the G20 is over?
Well, I'm personally looking at most... Is the caller there? Are we good?
Yeah, we have a caller. Can we
take that? Please, by all means. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get back to your question in a moment.
The show topic on Friday.
Okay, we have a caller, area code 732. You're on the air with the Truth or Girls.
Hi. Hey. I listened on Friday, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a ton of feedback. I can't really understand what I'm saying, but I'll ask the question, then I'll hang up. On Friday, the topic was truth or burnout, and I experienced that this weekend and today, and I was just wondering what your suggestions or tips were on experiencing truth or burnout, and also kind of tying in with that, like, what are your techniques on approaching people? You know, what have you found as effective? I know you guys were talking about it. People in Toronto are different than people in New York City. Those, I guess I just would like all of you to speak to those two topics, and I'll hang up the phone and listen.
Okay, thanks for your call.
All right, thanks.
Thank you so much, caller. I mean, that's great. Truth or burnout, you know, is something that it really is sort of just a experienced constipation where you're taking all this information in and you're not putting enough of it out. You're not finding a creative outlet. You're not finding an empowering outlet for it. And so it just crushes you. In terms of working too hard, you know, you get a guy like Alex Jones who can go 18 hours a day. During the G20, I was getting 3 hours of sleep a night, and I was on the streets the rest of the time. I was postering during the G20. I was postering before the G20. I was trying to be a counter-psychological operation, trying to chill people out. I was wearing my 9/11 inside job shirt on Wednesday, the 23rd of June, when I got ID'd a dozen times by the cops, and I was walking around the fence, and I was just letting everybody know, yo, you know, they could blow something up and kill a bunch of you guys, and we should all be aware of this. And then on the 24th, on Thursday, I was followed by police, city workers, and helicopters up Yonge Street, the longest street in Canada, you know, following me east and west of Yonge. I didn't know why, but later I found out they were just sort of ripping my posters off as I was putting them down on a Thursday afternoon on a busy street during rush hour, which proves to me how effective the information was in terms of, you know, Montreal and Vancouver don't use fluoride. Do they know something we should? Fluoridealert.org, you know, and a couple little pictures. And I was also protesting the protest. I was saying, screw the $1 billion protest. Who wants to yell at a fence and go home? And I was pointing out how the protest model is something where politicians and business leaders and so on, you know, who have you know, numbers, fax machines, electorates, responsibilities, you know, a list of things they voted for, a list of things they're going to vote for, and all these things to work with, tell a bunch of, you know, activists, go over there, stand in a field, chant a bunch of old communist slogans, pick a fight with a bunch of armed cops, get beat up, and go home. And then we'll listen to you. And so
that's funny.
That's the model. That's what they did. They said, yeah, go over there and yell for a bit, and we'll listen to you. You know, and most other lobby groups operate like lobby groups to talk to them directly. So in an answer to the gentleman's question, I think truth or burnout comes when you're not being creatively fulfilled by what you're doing with respect to this information. If all you're doing is taking it in, you could overdose on horror movies. You could overdose on anything that's extreme. And so if you're producing something and you're proud of it and you get validation from other people, it's tougher to suffer burnout And the second thing I'll add on that, finally, is music. Get some ballsy music to get you going. I was playing Jay-Z and Eminem's Renegade. You know, never been afraid to say what's on my mind now, any given time of day, because I'm a renegade. And I was playing that, and I was actually mouthing the words during the G20 martial law, and people, old people, were looking at me, going, right on, dude. Because everyone was scared to talk with 10,000 or 20,000, you know, cops, troops, mercs, and spooks roving everywhere in unmarked vans and jeeps and informing, and then, of course, the marked vans and jeeps, and just an overwhelming, oppressive presence, and people were, it's like we couldn't breathe. Half the city couldn't breathe. And so expressing yourself freely in that environment is one way to push past that. So number of things you can do. Sorry for the long answer, but this is important because it's not a question of, you know, whether or not we can do stuff. It's simply a question of why we don't feel like it. And truth or burnout is part of that. And there are ways to beat that.
I think you're right on about what you said. If you just keep taking in all this information all the time, and you don't do something with it, well, you could just get overloaded. You could become somebody who, like, knows something about everything, but not really. It's a lack of focus and then a lack of an outlet. You know, it's coming in from all directions, and it's not going anywhere. And two, the outlet has to be constructive. I mean, to just approach random people on the street and get into arguments with them, I think, is totally pointless. And if you're just taking in all this information and arguing with your friends, your family, and people you meet everywhere you go, you will end up feeling burnt out and alienated. It's not constructive, so you have to find ways of using that information and spreading it where you're not, you know, antagonizing everyone around you, and you're actually reaching people, and you feel that it's doing some good, and you are doing good, and you're part of a larger movement that's part of a change in consciousness.
Absolutely, and you can't, you know, what you can't do is, you know, you can't think just because you know 9/11 is an inside job that you haven't been affected by generations of brainwashing. Because we all have. You know, our parents were, and our education system, and, you know, the same, you know, truthers by and large are just like the general public. They just happen to learn more about the New World Order. But,
well,
you know, they're just as apathetic as the general public. And that's because of our socialization. I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. It's just that if you don't think that's true, then by all means explain it. And so we have to move from learning to thinking. You know, we're into learning. I learned this. Did you learn this? Did you see the latest? And forming this little subculture. Instead of learning a bunch of stuff for ourselves, or maybe to argue about it with other people who are informed, or maybe just informing the informed, we've got to work on informing the uninformed, you know, reverse engineering some of their smaller concerns. I found recently the most successful thing I've done recently, and ever, actually it's happening right now, is saying G20 martial law is over, will men stop it from happening again? And the guys snapped to attention, and the women snapped to attention, and 80% of people downtown Toronto kind of know more or less, you know, what I'm up to, in the sense that if you walk around with me, you'll see 80% of people as I walk by sort of looking at me and give me a nod or some sort of acknowledgement or whatever. And because ultimately, ladies, and I think that, you know, you'll probably appreciate this like most ladies do, if men don't get active on this, it's not getting done. Now, I'm not saying there aren't good individual, you know, females. I can name 25 of them, you know, doing a better job than I'm doing. But as a collective, as a group, as a social grouping, for thousands of years, whenever the tribe or the town was attacked by another tribe, it was always men who got together and had that aggression and that will and that desire to protect, you know, what they were responsible for, that dealt with it. And so I'm putting more pressure on men to act like men and to give women more personal space when you walk by them. Because, you know, I could be more of a problem for a woman than she could be for me if I look at her, if I stare at her, if I walk close to her. Whereas if a guy plows into me on the sidewalk, which has happened, I kind of shrug it off unless it goes somewhere. But if a guy plows into a woman, and I'm talking about most women, not the exceptional superwoman, UFC fighter, astronaut, scientist girl, or whatever. I'm talking about being respectful of where we are at this time in history, how we've been socialized, and what we can do to be more gentlemanly to deal with it.
But we're at the end of the hour, and I just want to thank you for so much for coming on. I understand you won't be with us the last segment, so I'll say goodbye to you now. And everybody, you could check out TorontoTruthSeekers.com.